I'm Ryan Kelly with thehomeloanexpert.com. We've all heard that mortgage interest rates have started to rise, but I'm not here to scare you like those other banks and mortgage companies. I'm still locking loans in, saving people thousands of dollars a month. Thehomeloanexpert.com.
The Home Loan Expert LLC.
Reese brings up a good point. Brown, yesterday, were you not the one making fun of the fact that I set a lot of alarms?
Yes.
I set one at 4 o'clock, 4:15, 4:20, 4:25, 4:30,
that is true. That is true. I did make fun of that. But let me explain what happened. It had nothing to do with how many alarms I have set. And this has happened to my wife before, and it was very puzzling. But it happened to me, and I'm curious. I'm glad you brought this up. I would like some feedback if it's ever happened to any of our listeners. But on my iPhone...
Which you use as an alarm
clock. Which I use as my alarm. It's the only alarm clock I have.
Now,
perhaps we need a backup. But on my iPhone, my alarm was going off, but it wasn't making the noise.
Did you have the volume turned
on? I did, and I had the switcher on. That's the only time all day long I turn on the volume on my phone, right? The little switch.
You don't have to do that, actually.
Well, I do that just to be safe. I know you don't have to, but I do it just to be safe, I thought.
My alarm has never done that. It's all, knock on wood.
Rockstar?
I don't use my phone. I use an actual alarm clock.
Look at old school Rockstar.
Not the one that goes like. It comes on the radio.
Rockstar has a bird, a rooster that rolls around his bedroom.
No, I naturally wake up with a smile on my face, ready to go.
Does your clock tick? Does it go?
Yeah, it does. It's a Timex.
60 minutes, man.
Get your mowing done in less time with a zero turn from Artek Tractor in Jasper. They have one of the largest selections around, whether it's commercial or residential use. You'll reduce the time you spend on your mower with a new zero-turn mower from Artek Tractor. Highway 5 in Jasper. Check them out at artektractor.com. But the screen showed the alarm was going off. It just wasn't making noise. And for whatever reason, I woke up at like 5:25, and you know, you peel your eyes and you look out the window and you're like, oh, my gosh.
Is it Saturday? I hope it's Saturday. Please tell me it's Saturday.
There is light in the sky. I got problems, buddy.
Yeah. No, you really didn't have problems. Jim had problems.
We
learned in the first segment how bad Jim is solo.
No.
That's why he's always a part of an ensemble. All right. We'll get back to the NBA as we continue on this morning, but you've heard enough of that for the first 30 minutes. Yesterday, college football. We get the announcements from ESPN to sort of fill in on some of the other games that we will see this year in the first 3 weeks, specifically Alabama and Auburn. If you missed this yesterday, I thought we got tremendous news yesterday. If you're an Alabama fan, you already knew Louisville at 7 o'clock on ABC. Tremendous news that the Arkansas State game's a 2:30 game. I mean, I don't know about you, but if I'm going to Tuscaloosa for a non-SEC or Power 5 game, I don't want it to be really that late at night. 2:30 seems like a pretty good time. I get a good tailgate in, plus I get to go watch, you know, the Tide usually roll over an FCS opponent or a group of five team like Arkansas State, and then I'm back to my tailgate or wherever I want to be to watch the best game in the country in prime time that night. That seems like a perfect setup for a 2:30 Arkansas State game.
I would think so. Now, we've talked with a lot of fans about this, and there are some that prefer the 6 o'clock window. They like that 6 o'clock kick. We'll get to that in a moment. But a 6 o'clock kick, because it gives you all day to tailgate, and then good and cool night game in those early games where it's still really hot.
That's a good point.
And it's not too late getting home. I mean, look, Jim, it's different in every fan base, but I don't know it could be another Dreamland Bowl. If we just ask the fan bases the most desirable normal SEC kick times, I know they hate the 11 o'clock. But I wonder where the 2:30 falls. The only drawback on that, and if you're an Alabama fan, you're going to want to watch your team, but that is going head-to-head with Georgia-South Carolina, which might be the biggest game it's one of the biggest games in the country that weekend. Mm. So you're going head-to-head with that, but if you're an Alabama fan, you want to watch your team, so I don't guess you really care.
That's right. The 6 o'clock Ole Miss kick for Alabama, I thought was a blessing as well, because I was fearful that was going to be the 8:15 window.
Yeah, we discussed several, even the right out of game day game.
Yeah, but 8:15 was my concern that it was going to be one of those late night games at Bryant-Denny that we've seen a couple of times with Ole Miss. So Ole Miss is 6 o'clock ESPN. So those are the first three kick times for Alabama, 7 o'clock in Orlando, 2:30 week two for Arkansas State, 6 o'clock over at Ole Miss, so not a late night game there. For Auburn, we already knew LSU 230 in week three. We find out that the biggest game in the country, in my opinion, week one, is going to be 230 on ABC. So you get Alabama and Auburn playing back-to-back on ABC 3340, your station, Brown, as Washington plays Auburn in Atlanta 230 on ABC. And if you're a fan in this state, that's fantastic because you get to watch all of Auburn in that meaningful game and all of Alabama if you're a fan of Auburn after you.
I mean, that was excellent news because my fear was going to be those games being played head-to-head.
Yeah, same time.
And the Auburn-Washington game is obviously the bigger game nationally, and it would be the game that would get most of my attention because it's going to be the better game. But especially in that first week, I want to be able to watch both of our teams play in this state because you learn so much in that first week.
Yep.
You know, I mean, for Alabama, you're going to see either Tagovailoa making his first start or see how good Jalen Hurts looks after he's held Tagovailoa off. You know, you're going to see what those running backs look like. You're going to see what that secondary looks like. Same for Auburn. You know what you got in Stidham, but now you're going to get to see what you've got in some of these running backs, the secondary as well for them. I mean, there's just so much you learn in game one. I don't want to miss a single play of them. And my fear with Dunaway was, at least for part of the game, we were going to have head-to-head action with Auburn and Alabama. So you're right. That was tremendous news.
All right. So 2:30 for Auburn in week one, 6:30 in week two as they play Alabama State, and then 2:30 LSU. So those are the three start times there. A couple other games around the country we get kick times from. Week two, that Clemson-Texas A&M game, we know it'll be 6 o'clock in prime time. And if you're a fan of the Egg Bowl, which I am, and I'm always happy when the Egg Bowl is played on Thursday night of Thanksgiving, it is back on Thursday night, 5 o'clock Thanksgiving night, Mississippi State and Ole Miss and Oxford this year on ESPN. That excites me. I like the Egg Bowl happening on Thursday night.
Yeah, that's where that game belongs, and we got it there last year, and unfortunately there was, you know, the injury that really changed that game, but it ended up being a fairly entertaining game after all of that. I think that's a good spot for it. We've had some differing games there. We've had Texas A&M LSU.
Yep. The Egg Bowl is the one I want there.
Oh, really? Even more than Texas A&M LSU. Yeah. When they first said Texas A&M LSU, I had high hopes for that one there.
Yeah. No, give me the Egg Bowl there every year.
Okay.
Because that game, even when it's 5-6 versus 5-6, for some reason that game draws me in. I like that game.
I mean, it's just a bigger rivalry. You know it means more to the fans than Texas A&M LSU does.
Yeah, it's bad blood, man. It is. It is all Taylor Swift right now. It's bad blood.
I've never lived a day of my life in Mississippi, but I know a lot of people that have.
Yep.
And they tell me, look, I know the programs in our state aren't Alabama and Auburn. We get that. We accept that. But the bad blood is every bit like the Iron Bowl bad blood. I know you don't believe that.
Right now, it's more toxic than Alabama.
That's what I've been told, Jim, and that is really difficult to believe, but I've been told that's the case.
So those are some kick times from yesterday to fill in for your planning, but mostly for the Alabama-Auburn, the first 3 weeks are set. And your other big news yesterday in the SEC was the news that, as expected, Mustafa Heron is going to St. John's. Now he is trying to get a hardship rule clearance where he can play immediately at St. John's, saying he is leaving Auburn, going back to that area to be closer to his ailing mom who lives in Connecticut. Jeff Goodman, our friend with ESPN who covers college basketball, made a good point yesterday. The NCAA is cutting way down on the number of hardship cases they award, even though there's a lot of transfers every year in college basketball. Apparently the old school hardship rule, which Mustafa is trying to get cleared for, is not being handed out as frequently as it used to. We'll see if he gets clearance for that to move closer, as he is claiming, to his ailing mom, and that's his reason for leaving Auburn to go to St. John's. But he is a big-time scorer, and he's going to finish up his college career there in the New York metropolitan area. In the exact right direction back in Oregon there.
Well, you know, you got to prove it on the field. Recruiting doesn't win championships, but it certainly puts you on the road to winning championships.
I thought that program maybe was going to go back and very mediocre for a long time.
No, I did too. I thought Helfrich obviously took it a step backwards. Success early on took it a step backwards. Taggart didn't really rebuild it. He just had a cup of coffee there.
He was just there 1 year.
Yeah, I mean, there was nothing he did that rebuilt it. But I think that program still got enough swagger left from the Chip Kelly days that resonates in recruiting. Even though, what are we now, 5 years removed from the Chip Kelly days? I mean, it's been a while since he was there, but I think some of these guys you're recruiting probably still remember Oregon being Oregon.
Yeah, they were 11 yeah. and 12, and that meant a lot to them.
Yeah, and all the uniforms and things like that. So I think the swagger still exists. Now he's been able to capitalize on that. I ask you, and this kind of goes into what you were talking about, what do you think Mario Cristobal has to do to be successful at Oregon? Because initially you'd say, okay, he's got to win a championship. Well, Chip Kelly never did that, and he's beloved.
Well, not a national championship.
Not a national championship.
He's got to win a Pac-12 championship.
Yeah, he's definitely got to win a conference championship,
yeah,
right?
You got everywhere. You got to win championships for the most part to keep your job long term. Cristobal is at a program that has never won a national championship.
That's right.
But they've been long enough on the national stage that they want to be back in the national championship conversation. And they've fallen off of that. And a lot of people thought that because of the recruiting, how tough it is to recruit to Oregon, that maybe they lost their momentum and would not get it back. They have to be so good in California.
They do. And that's what he's doing.
Six of these guys from California.
Yeah, and that's where he's going to make his living there, is recruiting in California, like Chip Kelly did. But let me ask you this. Tougher Pac-12 now or when Chip Kelly was the coach at Oregon? I mean, you would say Stanford's about the same, right? That's their big rival.
Yeah, Stanford may have been a tick better back then.
Okay, I'll give you that.
USC was a tick down back then.
Yeah, and they're better now and look like they're improving.
Yeah.
The one that's a no-doubter is Washington. Washington is much better now than they were when Chip Kelly was at Oregon.
So their division is tougher now than it was, because there's two guys that can battle them as opposed to one.
Yeah, so I think Cristobal has a tougher situation.
Three if you count Washington State, and they're...
They're better.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Washington State is better under Mike Leach than they were when Chip Kelly was there.
Absolutely.
I don't think there's any doubt.
Yeah.
So they're better.
I think during Chip Kelly's time, I think we played an Apple Cup at one point where it was 0-10 versus 0-10.
Maybe so. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right about that. Washington State met, and the winner got their first win.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how bad those two were. So they've all improved. So that's my point. I think the Pac-12 is more difficult around Mario Cristobal than it was around Chip Kelly. So I think that's one challenge for Cristobal, is he's got to figure out how to do this in a much more difficult Pac-12. So you would agree that he's at least got to win conference championships to be successful. I think that's plural, Jim. I don't think if he's there 7 years and he's got one Pac-12 championship, I don't think it will be considered a success for him.
All right, give me the coach you think has something to prove coming up. And this is not a hot seat conversation,
because
I went Kevin Sumlin at Arizona. Give me the one guy you think has something to prove.
I think it's Jimbo Fisher. And I say that because, and I'm not saying Jimbo Fisher has to get to Atlanta or have double-digit wins, but Jimbo Fisher is a national championship winning coach. He's coached Heisman Trophy winning quarterback. The guy obviously has a really good resume, and you can make points in favor of or against Jimbo Fisher. That's happened on this show a lot. But when you're at a storied program like Florida State and a less storied program comes to you and says, we'll give you $75 million guaranteed to coach our team, that's says we think you can make our program elite.
Right.
Now, Jimbo Fisher, I don't think anybody expects him to do that in year one. That's not fair if you do. But I would think, Jim, you've got to see some sort of signs that that program is headed, at least taking a step in that direction this year. And I don't know what those signs are. I don't know what you would look for. But, you know, more physical play would be one thing I would look for. They've got to have a more physical edge to them to survive in the SEC West. That was one of the criticisms of Kevin Sumlin. They just didn't have that physical edge. So I think that's one thing. You've got to have a physical edge. I think you could see improved quarterback play in that pro-style system that Jimbo Fisher is going to run. I just think you've got to see signs that Jimbo Fisher has put his stamp on that program. And it's comparable to Nick Saban, because Alabama, though they were a far more storied program than Texas A&M, went to Saban and basically said, make us elite again. And though, as we talked about with John Parker Wilson, we talked to him earlier, he was part of those first teams, Jim, that first team wasn't great, but you immediately saw signs of a different team. And then in year two, you saw a different team. And I think that's it for Jimbo Fisher. I think you've got to see signs of a different team this year. And then 2019, you've got to see a different team.
He has yet to sign his contract, though he is working and getting paid. as a 10-year, $75 million coach. So when that story came out, he has not signed his contract. Some folks at LSU were like, hey, maybe we can still get Jimbo Fisher.
Wouldn't that be something?
But that is not the case. He is working on a signed memorandum and is getting paid. And as any lawyer and agent will tell you, that likely if you're accepting and getting paid for a 10-year, $75 million contract, you're under contract.
Yeah, if that check shows up every week and you accept it, you've accepted the contract at that point.
Yeah. So they are working to still finalize the T's and I's there and signing that contract in College Station.
The Round Table Vault 2015.
Y'all ready for this? Hey there, welcome back to the most state-of-the-art podcast out there today. It's your good pal, Ronnie T.
Robbie
T. You know I love starting the show with some new tunes I'm digging. So let's take a listen to this recently discovered gem that is sure to be climbing the charts. Wow. I think that one will surely be playing nonstop at the MTV Beach House next summer.
No fade outs.
Uh-oh.
Old phone.
Looks like we got a live one on the hotline. Let's see who it is. Hello? Well, look at that. It's my own dad and inspiration, Bobby T. Man, now the pressure is on because I know how much of a stickler you are about sound quality, and I guess that's where I get it from, right? Right. Oh, yeah. I remember that time when we went to the schoolyard. Yeah. I know, the stories you could tell. Well, Dad, it was great talking to you, and thank you for calling into the very first podcast. Okay, then. Phew, it's going to be tough to follow up this episode on the show, but I assure you, I'm up for that challenge. Right now, we're going to do our weekly birthday shout-out segment and let our lucky gal tell you a little about herself.
My name is Sarah Marie Thomas, and I just turned 7 years old.
And I never miss an episode of the Robbie T podcast.
And I never miss an episode of the
Robbie T podcast.
Robbie T podcast.
That's adorable. Thank you, little Sarah. I'll tell you what, we have listeners and fans of all ages. That's the beauty of podcasts. Which reminds me, if you or anyone you know has a business that would like to sponsor the show, please drop us a line. Once the website gets up and working, we will accept any sponsorship and are willing to do road shows at carnivals, bowling alleys, birthday parties, retirement homes, manufacturing facilities, you name it, we'll be there. Well, that's it for the first show. Mark that one under success. Tune in next time for another episode of...
The Round Table Vault 2015.
One thing from last night, J.R. Smith and Chris Webber. Chris Webber, who was the analyst in the Western Conference Finals, and boy, I missed him last night. I don't watch enough or listen. NBA.
Oh, you don't like Jackson and Van Gundy?
I do not like Jackson and Van Gundy.
Did you hear Van Gundy?
I like Reggie Miller and Chris Webber a lot better as analysts. But Chris Webber is known for the timeout in the Superdome during the national championship game. Unfortunately, that has hung around his neck forever.
Yes.
And it was a situation where he didn't have timeouts. He called a timeout. The question now is, on a high-profile basketball stage, is J.R. Smith's non-shot pull-out and run out the clock tied up the new Chris Webber? Has it passed Chris Webber as the biggest flub and faux pas in basketball history?
And maybe we can put this out as a Dreamland poll, because I'd like to know, because that has long time in basketball circles done away. If I say, give me the biggest gaffe in basketball history, I think everyone would say Chris Webber. Chris Webber, yes. Calling it. I mean, it directly cost his team a national championship. They were still going to have to score, obviously, a basket to win, but there was zero chance they were going to win. After he calls the timeout, the technical gives North Carolina the free throws, and they get the ball. So, I mean, it 100% cost his team a shot at winning a national championship. And you could argue, though it was still unlikely, that Cleveland was going to find a way to win three more games. If they could have stolen game one in Oakland, it was the very best chance they would have ever had to win that series. So you could argue that J.R. Smith's gaffe could have cost them that. Now, look, J.R. Smith still got to go up over Durant and get the ball. One thing we haven't talked about is how is Durant getting out-rebounded by J.R. Smith in that situation. That was pretty sad,
that's
really.
That's the most frustrating thing about this team that some people like Lance say is the best of all time, is that this team doesn't give me 100% effort at portions of the game.
And it feels like they coast and then they flip a switch. Yeah, and when they flip that switch, they're amazing.
And feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. Does this team, they were so entertaining the first year they won a championship before Durant joined, and they were sort of the Cinderella kids, the Splash Brothers with Draymond Green that sort of made this fun style of basketball, and Steph Curry shooting it from all over the planet, and Klay Thompson shooting it from all over the planet. Have they not turned into a bunch of gloating? They're so good, and they seem to be gloating over their greatness. They're not as charming as they once were. And I know Lance called it, said Steph Curry would eventually be a hated player. He was beloved for a while.
He's developed an edge.
He has, but you got Draymond.
Nobody's ever liked him.
I know. And last night, you know, if you're Charles Barkley, you had to be sitting there going, everyone in America that are not a Warriors fan wants to punch the guy right now. He's at the free throw line. He's shaking and doing all of that, which I love the joy in the game. But at that point, it became taunting, and he knew what he was doing at the end. Tristan Thompson got that, what I thought was a horrible.
I'm not even sure it was a foul, much less being tossed.
Yeah, a flagrant two. I'm not sure about that. And then he's clapping right by his face.
Well,
and he stuffs the ball in his face. I understand that they seem like they've grown into a gloating bunch of an excellent basketball team that has become a gloating bunch of prima donnas.
Well, all of that started when LeBron swatted Curry, and Curry came back at him. And that's a little different Steph Curry than we've seen before. I mean, when Steph Curry first came in the league, he wasn't that guy, but he went back after LeBron and started chirping.
I love watching their greatness, Brown.
Yeah, I do too. But it was just funny, Dunaway, that, I mean, that is so Draymond Green, right? That Tristan Thompson got tossed out, and Draymond Green just couldn't stand the fact that he wasn't somehow involved in Tristan Thompson getting tossed out. So he had to insert himself in the situation.
Yep.
And then gets the ball stuffed in his face. But that's what Draymond does. And listen, he's in Tristan Thompson's head for the rest of the series now. That's what he wants. But I'm with you. This team has developed a little bit of a different edge. Klay Thompson seems to be the one guy that never changes. Like, Klay Thompson seems to be always Klay Thompson to me.
Durant seems to always be Durant to me. He doesn't seem to be. It is Steph that has changed a lot, in my opinion. And Draymond is able to crank it up a little bit more. It's a team that is not as enjoyable to watch as it once was for me.
Do you think that surpasses Chris Webber? I mean, that's widely regarded as one of the biggest gaffes ever.
The J.R. Smith thing.
Do you think we'll remember that more than Chris Webber now?
I don't think so. I think Webber will stay for the people that saw it happen live. There are some other, I mean, Magic Johnson did the same thing one time that J.R. Smith did last night.
He dribbled out with the game tie?
Yeah, with the game tie, thinking that he was up and dribbled out. Also, I'm told that Harper, back with the Mavericks, did the same thing in a play. Go back to Isaiah Thomas inbounding the ball in Boston at the Boston Garden and threw it right to Larry Bird, who allowed him, remember, what did they score, 5 points in a few seconds to come back and win the game?
But, I mean, what's worse, Chris Webber not knowing if you've got timeouts or not knowing what the score is? I'd say it's worse not knowing what the score is.
Yeah, I think people
forget. It's easier
to
lose track of timeouts.
Yeah, that's coach's job to make sure you know timeouts.
Yeah, but I don't think...
It's my job to know
I don't think Ty Lue has to say, guys, remember, we're tied at 107 here.
After a made free throw. It wasn't like it was the course of the game. You had time to gather yourself and know the situation.
Yeah, he's just made the free throw. When a guy makes a free throw, is it your natural instinct to look up the scoreboard and...
Yep.
And just see what the score is?
Yeah, I go, okay, 107, 107. If he makes this, we're up. I got to play defense.
Exactly.
They're probably going to call timeout, so I don't have to worry about it. If he misses it,
I got to get the board.
Rebound and put it back up. We got a chance to win.
or get fouled.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, there's a half decent chance. He could have done 1,000 different things. The one thing he did was the one thing he couldn't do.
No way they called Durant. Durant could have taken off his wrist.
They weren't going to call him?
Like Game of Thrones, they would not have called a foul.
Brandon is in Birmingham. He's next on the Jocks Roundtable from Ernest McCarty Ford, Highway 31 in Alabaster. What's up, Brandon? How are you?
Hey, how are you?
Doing great, man. Thank you.
Good. Yeah, look, I'm not a Warriors fan. They're entertaining, like I said. I'm not a Warriors fan, but I don't necessarily think that they're prima donnas. I think that you have to factor in the fact that they're getting everybody's best shot every night, every game. They're always going to, you know, for the past 4 years. And, you know, that you do develop an edge. I don't think there's only so many times that you can let somebody, other teams, you know, try to punk you, I guess, if that's, a, you know, for lack of a better term. And I think that, like, with the Steph Curry LeBron thing, you know, I think Steph Curry, you know, I guess had a chip on his shoulder since he came into the league. And, you know, the knock on him is, oh, he's a frail guy. He's, you know, he's not tough, which really isn't true if you really watch, if you really kind of know what you're looking at. Of course, against LeBron, most people are going to be at a physical disadvantage. And so I just think that they kind of, I guess, they rub people the wrong way, I guess, when they celebrate. I don't really see them as prima donnas, but I do think it does kind of grate on people after a while. But I do think some of that is in response to, you know, if you've ever played basketball, you know kind of what's being said out there. You know, there's some, you know, pretty, you know, off-color things being said to them as well. I think they do kind of rub people the wrong way because they are so good. As far as the Tristan Thompson thing, I agree that it was an overreaction to, you know, tossing him out really wasn't necessary for what he did. But I do think it was kind of silly of him to be like, oh, you can't shoot the ball because, you know, it's the end of the game. That's the dumbest thing I've ever seen, and I don't know why that's a thing in sports now. But, you know, just my two cents.
Otherwise, good stuff, Brandon.
Yeah, thank you, Brandon.
Yeah.
Yeah, what he's saying about Tristan Thompson is that it looked like he was upset that they were getting run-up points, basically, right there.
Yeah, shooting, but the clock was running out. You got to throw it somewhere. Yeah. You can just dribble it and give it to him, whatever. But Brandon makes a good point. Prima donna may have been the wrong word there, but the celebrating seems to be different now for them than it was their first run to a championship. But they are the greatest team of our time and one of the greatest teams of all time. And they are the best shooting team I have seen with my own eyes ever. And boy, in overtime, did they get hot and blow them away. And LeBron had, what, 2 in overtime? 51 in the game, but 2 in overtime. And after the J.R. Smith situation, it went sort of wrong.
Mama told me when I was young, come sit beside me, my only son, and listen closely to what I say, and if you do this, it'll help you some sunny day. Take your time, don't let too fast. Troubles will come and they will pass. We'll find a woman, yeah, and you'll find love. And don't forget, son, there is someone up above.
always something you love and understand. Baby, be a simple kind of man. Oh, won't you do this for me, sir, if you can? Man's gold, all that you need is in your soul, and you can do this if you try. All that I want for you, my soul, is to be satisfied and be a simple.